Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to join our conversations on the exchange, you are more than welcome to do so. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, our local number is 541-552-6782. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. There are many examples of women in positions of power and influence. By this point in history, it should not make big news when a woman is named, for example, to head a major corporation. But it is, because it still does not happen that often that a woman ends up in the number one spot. The right to vote came nearly a century ago for the whole country. The feminine mystique was half a century ago. What's taking women so long to catch up on some key measures of success? Today's guests give a major clue with the title of their book, The New Soft War on Women. Carol Rivers is a professor of journalism at Boston University. Carol, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Good to have you here today. Rosalind Barnett is with us as well. She's a senior scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at the other BU, Brandeis University. Rosalind, welcome to you.
Welcome to you. Thank you.
So you come at this from very different professions. How did you begin working together, Rosalind?
Oh, this is our sixth book together, so we have a long history. What brought us together initially, and it actually sustains our partnership, is looking at both the research literature and what it has to tell us about women and their progress or lack thereof, and what the media is saying. And we find that there are often very large disconnects, and no more so than in our current book, where the media, as you pointed out, is telling a story of success. Women have made it and pointing to, you know, the very true advances of some women, Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton and Marissa Mayer and so forth, and making a big fuss about all this, which is due, but leaving out what the research is telling us, which is that most women are not seeing these kinds of gains. In fact, they are making a lot of advances in education. They're getting the majority of advanced degrees at every level, but they're not; those gains are not being translated into the workplace, and we want to point that out and draw attention to the plight of many women, to encourage, you know, women to read this book and to see what's happening around them so they can take steps to further their own goals.
Carol Rivers, you're the journalism professor in this group. So can we assume that maybe the reason that it is still remarkable that a woman gets to be the head of a large company is because it just doesn't happen that much?
It doesn't. You know, there's talk about the glass ceiling. We talk about the plugged pipeline, that, in fact, we're seeing women all along the way, though there's lots of women in the pipeline now with degrees, you know, good credentials, should be moving up, but they're not. And we're seeing that, for example, they're vanishing in the boardrooms, their executive suites, they're not among companies' top earners. And I like the quote of the head of the think tank Catalyst, who says, if this trend line represented a patient's pulse, she'd be dead. So we see that the gains that were made in the 90s in the workforce are slipping away very quickly, and that's very troublesome.
So the numbers are actually dropping in some cases, Carol?
Oh, yes. In fact, we know now that, for example, men have regained some 800,000 jobs since the crash, and women have lost 300,000. And we're seeing that the one major problem is they're just not advancing. You know, given their promise, given their education, given where they should be, they're not there. They're just stalling out.
So, Rosalind Barnett, what is a soft war on women, and who is waging it?
Well, soft war is, we call it that because it's not the old in your face, you know, we don't hire women, we don't like women here. It's much more subtle, indirect, harder to point at, and also not illegal. And women aren't prepared for it. They're buying this media story that, you know, the sky's the limit, and they end up in the workplace, and they're sort of blindsided by things that happen to them that they haven't been prepared for. So that's why it's new, and that's why it's soft. And another aspect of it, the new part, is that women now constitute more than half of the workforce and more than half of the educated workforce. So you have a lot of women who, you know, were trained to think that they could and should advance, and they're not. It's not happening for them.
You say it's not illegal. I mean, what parts of it would some of us think should be illegal and aren't?
Well, for example, when men and women work together on a team, what you find is that even when the woman had the idea, got the credit, did 99% of the work, the man gets the credit. And we heard from women all over the country that this happened to them, and you know, they'd finish up and they'd feel great, and then they'd go into their bosses or their board or something, and they'd see that some people were saying, "Oh, young man, you did a great job," and they're addressing the questions to the man, and the woman who really did the work winds up sometimes seeing the man promoted, sometimes even herself getting laid off. Now, that'd be nice if that were illegal, but it's kind of hard to legislate that kind of thing because kind of based on the assumptions that people make, okay, here's two people work together, the man had to be the leader, right? That's just what we believe.
Oh, I see what your point is. It's hard to figure out ways to legislate giving credit where credit is due.
Exactly.
So you just laid some numbers out for us. Women are, what, more than half of the workforce now and well more than half of the upper-level degrees, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Whether it's bachelor's, master's, professional-level, PhD degrees, they're more than half. And that number is increasing over time.
And yet we see the phenomenon of women are being promoted on performance and men are being promoted on potential. So that, you know, a woman goes into a company, she really works hard, she's good, she's terrific, and yet in comes this guy. He is, everybody thinks he's terrific, he talks a good game, he looks great, and they say, he's got star power, he's going to go far, even though he's not done anything yet. So we find that, and also if a woman goes to a new company, she has to prove herself all over again while the man sort of resume trails after him. So women are always, you know, having to prove themselves again and again, and men not so much.
All right, so it's a case of, well, this guy's got a bright future, let's move him up. Not the same sort of thing for women. We'll get into that more when we get on the other side of a break. The book is called The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Women, Men, and Our Economy. Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join this discussion yourself. We'll come back and talk more with Carol and Rosalind and take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Reilly. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about women and their ability to keep pace with men in the workplace or the lack thereof. Today's guest wrote a book called The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Women, Men, and Our Economy. Carol Rivers is a journalism professor at Boston University. Rosalind Barnett, a scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. They are our guests, and you can join this discussion. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. There's a key in the book here, Rosalind, to what's going on with executive positions, and that is with board positions. So what is the situation, for example, on the boards of Fortune 500 companies? How many of those seats are occupied by women?
A tiny fraction. And the number is actually going down, which is very worrying. And that's especially true because there's so many more women now that are in the workplace and that are qualified to hold these positions. There are groups trying to encourage women to be nominated and putting their names forward, but the pace of change in the right direction, we think, is very, very slow.
Was the recession used as something of an excuse? I mean, did a lot of jobs get blown up because of the recession? Were gains still being made up until that time, or am I just reading too much into that as a barrier?
Well, no, actually, McKinsey did a study, and they said that this has been going on for some time, that this is a trend that has been churning. It wasn't just the crash of 2008, that this has been going on for a substantial number of years, since the late 90s, when a lot of big gains were made. So this trend has been, you know, hanging around.
You do get into, as you need to at some point, traditional gender roles in the book, The New Soft War on Women. Does having babies have anything to do with women's careers not staying quite on track as men do because they need to leave for a while, obviously, to have children, et cetera?
Well, it's a very interesting story. Yes, of course, having children is an issue, but we can learn a lot about the fact, for example, that most women are married, most women have children, and most women are in the workforce. So having children per se is not the huge obstacle that the media and other sources blow it up to be. And actually, when you look at the wage data and take into account the leaves for childbearing, it doesn't affect the fact that there's a persistent wage gap in spite of the fact that women take these leaves. So even if you take into account this parental time off that women take, some women take more than others, men are still earning more at every level. So we don't know, for example, the fact that a lot of women have children. In fact, there's a website that talks about women CEOs who have families, and I was surprised to learn this myself because I buy into the same stories we all buy into, that a number of women who had major corporations who have 3 and 4 children. And that's a story that's just not told. I think people would be surprised to hear that. Women can't hold down major jobs, high-level jobs in major corporations, and at the same time be a mother. And I think that's important news for employers and managers and for women themselves.
Carol Rivers, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You please ask.
Well, the question was about, since we're talking about this being something of a media distortion, and you're the media expert of the two of you, where does this come from? Is this lazy reporting and editing where it's just like, well, I heard this. Let's go do a story about that without a lot of facts attached?
I think so. For example, there was a big story that there's this opt-out revolution that smart women are dropping out of the workplace. Well, it wasn't true. It was a cover on the New York Times magazine, and they only talked to women in a couple of book groups. And when you start looking at the research, in fact, there was no opt-out revolution. That, by and large, most women who have professional degrees are staying in the workforce. They're not leaving. Some women are being pushed out by, crazy job hours and things like this, but there is no opt-out trend. So the media, a lot of it is sloppy reporting or, getting a few facts or getting a study wrong. And unfortunately, those stories tend to be, big media narratives like the end of men. There is no end of men, but, they cover stories everywhere. So it's very sloppy reporting in many cases.
The end of men in the sense that it's the end of their power in the workplace? Is that how that's been reported?
Yes, that men have lost their power in the workforce. The problem is that was all projected from the idea there's now slightly more women than men in colleges. But, does that mean that, men aren't, presidents, CEOs, that they don't hold down most of the big-time jobs? You just can't jump from a figure that says women have slightly more college degrees to the end of men, and it's just ridiculous, but that's what happens.
We talked about mothers before and parenting and so forth. The bias against mothers is so profound that there have been studies that show that for job applicants, if they have anything on their resume that could even barely hint that they might have children, they're much less likely to be called back for an interview than women who are single or for men, whether the men are fathers or not. And that mothers suffer what they call a motherhood penalty, so that they earn less, and that the lower earnings, of course, over time make them far less good providers than men. When men who become fathers get actually a bonus. So it's a motherhood penalty and a fatherhood bonus. Why? Because fathers are thought to be reliable, hardworking, and dedicated. When women who are mothers are thought to have divided loyalty, to be distracted. These are all biases. There's no data to support any of this, but they're very powerful and affect employment opportunities for women up and down the organizational ladder.
So the bonus, like an actual boost in salary for a father?
Salary and they're more likely to be nominated for management training positions, more likely to be given choice assignments because they have to support a family and so forth. Where women are less likely to be, women who have children, less likely to be offered positions that require any kind of travel or stretch assignments because of the bias that women can't or wouldn't want to hold these kind of positions.
When you put it that way, Go ahead, Carol.
It's even true when the women make it clear that they are happy to take these assignments. They're looking for these challenging assignments, but sort of just women sort of get left out. The idea, if you're a mother, you're brain dead and you're not loyal to the company. And that's a big problem for women, this perception.
You know, it almost sounds like there are still employers out there who want to take it out on women for getting pregnant. And I wish I could say that that weren't true, but there's a case that suggests that happened in our own area not very long ago.
Well, I don't know. Some cases, maybe subconscious, you know, just a knee-jerk, are pictures of what a mother looks like in this culture. The pictures that we all walk around with in our heads because they dominate the media are, you know, women 100% attentive to her child. And, of course, this is bolstered by the new wave of intensive parenting that's sort of catching on, that somehow a mother has to be, you know, 100% attentive and dedicated to her child. And if that's true, of course she can't be a good anything. She can't be a good employee for sure. And we have to challenge these. We have to ask where they come from and how real are they. I know I'm a mother and I've worked all my life, and my daughter as well. And we have to look at people around us and say, wait a minute, that picture of 100% attention needed by the baby is not the way it is for most women.
All right, a couple of terms that you use in the book here: climbers, scanners, hedgers, and coasters. What do these terms mean? Carol?
Well, I think that they were looking about the people who were the climbers, really dedicated to staying to the company, going, you know, 100% up, and then the hedgers who were, you know, not quite so far along. But I think the point of all these groups is that they kind of equally apply to men and women. That it isn't the case that men are the, you know, let's go, let's get up there, let's work hard, and women are the sort of, well, I don't know, I'm not sure. These types are sort of equally divided among men and women, and for the most part, women and men want the same things out of work.
We're talking to Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett about their book, The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Women, Men, and Our Economy. Join this discussion on The Exchange. It's one of two parts we're running on women in the workplace today. 800-838-3760. On the entire listening area, 541-552-6782 in the Rogue Valley, and online via email, jx@jeffnet.org. So when we talk about just sort of ways that people act in the workplace, it sounds like assertiveness or downright aggression. I mean, the responses are very different by gender to that kind of behavior.
Exactly. So when men are aggressive, they're thought about as competent, as showing leadership, and as being forceful. When women are seen as aggressive and bitchy, that's a very big problem, because women are at the same time told that if they want to be promoted, they should act more like their male colleagues. They should, in fact, be more aggressive and self-promoting. And so it's a double-edged sword for women. When they don't do it, they're damned, and when they do it, they're damned as well.
Well, yeah, I was waiting for somebody to use the word bitch, because that is, in fact, the word that only gets applied to women, and it suggests that there are certain kinds of behavior that are only identified with women.
Right.
Exactly, and I think you see this when you look at a lot of the powerful women. Look at the coverage of Hillary Clinton, for example. On the one hand, she was presented as being, you know, bitchy, too tough, and then when she shed a tear, she just degenerated into the female stereotype. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't tough enough. She was emotional. She was irrational. So, you know, and particularly the higher up the ladder that they get, women run into these ideas. And, you know, Sheryl Sandberg, who's the CEO of Facebook, says that she thinks this idea that if women are forceful and strong and competent, that they're bitchy, that this is one of the major roadblocks these days. And she described what happened at Facebook, which was very interesting, that a woman who was a manager got these evaluations. But instead of just sticking it in her review, people went back to the people who made these comments and said, would you have said this if she was a man and did the same thing? And they said, no. So the bitchy comments got left out of her review. So those are the kind of things I think we have to do. We have to realize where these ideas are coming from and how we think so differently about a man who's behaving exactly the same way as a woman.
One of the things we do in the book, we point to some strategies that women who are aware of these kind of problems can utilize to counter the effect. So, for example, a man who's angry in the workplace, as I said before, gets a lot of kudos about that. If a woman's angry, she's going to be negatively perceived unless she can explain where her anger comes from. She can say, you know, that guy was late for his appointment, or he failed to meet his deadline, and I got annoyed about it. if she can justify her anger by pointing to something outside of herself, then the people who are perceiving her are less likely to say, oh, my gosh, she's just another emotional, out-of-control woman. They're likely to say, oh, I can understand that. That would happen to me. I can understand that. I would do the same thing. So women have to go an extra step. They have to not just emote when it's appropriate to emote, but to explain that so that people around them won't use that negativity against them.
You give examples in the book of women who've been reprimanded when men have not been for some of the same remarks, which begs the question, then, what in God's name is the HR department doing?
Well, that's a good question, too.
Yeah, I think a lot of women don't want to complain, and I also think a lot of women are shocked, particularly younger women. There's some research showing that women now have rose-colored glasses on, that they read all this stuff in the media, and they believe everything's going to be wonderful, and they don't expect to run into these stereotypes. And when they do, you know, they start to think, well, if everything's wonderful, it's got to be my fault. I've got to go get another degree. I've got to take another course. I've got to do something else, and not realizing that it's going to get them nowhere if all these, you know, stereotypes are still around, that you have to get together with women or with sympathetic men. You have to get to the bosses. You have to do training so that these stereotypes, which are really stubborn and really block women, can start to disappear.
Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Their book is The New Soft War on Women. Here's Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Exchange.
Oh, that was quick. Hi. Thank you for writing your book, and thank you, Jeffrey, for having them on. I totally get what you guys are saying. My work life started in the 60s, and I worked in medicine for about 10 years, and since then I've mostly worked in social services and education, and I have longed to see the day when women will become much more influential in our culture generally, in our work culture, bringing with them, I always hope, the kinds of values and attitudes that women have, I think primarily because they are the ones who give birth and give life. I think everything you're talking about is a result of this incredible macho culture we've got. And the one thing I looked for in your book and didn't find, I found a little bit about the women in the military and the sexual harassment issues, but I've been disturbed by a trend where so many women are going into the military. And when I see on TV or something a military mom coming home having survived Afghanistan or Iraq and greeting her toddler, I'm just appalled, frankly. I don't think that's one area in which if I thought women would bring a more humanizing element to the military, then I'd say, yeah. What I see happening and what I saw happening in medicine was the doctors, female doctors I worked for way back when, had to become 10 times as tough as a guy in order to succeed. And so I'm wondering if you could talk about your take on the trend of women in the military.
All right, Sandy, thanks for that.
Well, I think one of the things to say is Chuck Hagel's recent comments about making it easier for women to take combat positions. It's a little bit off Sandy's point, but it's on the bigger point. So somehow we are making some changes in understanding what women can and can't do. So all of a sudden, what was not possible for women, they couldn't take combat positions. Now all of a sudden they can. So women obviously haven't changed, but the social perceptions of what women are able to do are changing all the time. It is not to say that it's not a very tough road for women. I think the sexual assault problem is huge, and I don't know how it's going to shake out, but it's very, very unfair to put women in a situation where they have to deal with saving their lives as well as fending off the unwanted advances from men.
And, you know, in the social services, where the caller mentioned he had worked and had been familiar with, we find something called the glass escalator. And that is in female-dominated professions like nursing and social work, men get on the glass escalator, which means they are promoted faster and they make more. And the people who are doing the promotions are their female supervisors. They're giving the men the position even when there are equally qualified women also around. So that it's not just men who have stereotypes in their heads. In this case, it's the women who are looking at the men and sort of automatically thinking leader. and giving them the promotion.
Is this something like reverse affirmative action, where because there are so few men in the profession, they feel like they need to promote the ones who are there?
Well, it's hard to know. People speculate about why. One reason might be that they don't want to seem as if they're favoring women, so they go out of their way to favor men. We don't know all the reasons, but certainly the net effect is that men are getting have an easier ride up to the top in these fields than women do.
All right, so we've heard about, obviously we know about the glass ceiling. You just talked about the glass escalator. You also talk about the glass cliff in the book. What is that, Carol Rivers?
Well, we've seen some research that shows that women tend to be appointed to, you know, the top job when the company's in real chaos. So the glass cliff is the idea that, hey, things are going to hell anyway, so we'll put this woman up on this impossible situation and she'll fail. And then everybody will say, well, you know, a woman was running and look what happened. So I think women have to be quite careful about stepping into these positions because, you know, they don't want to be the one that just stuck in there because they know the company's going downhill. And apparently that happened more than we would like.
Is that like what happened at Yahoo when they hired a woman who was actually already pregnant, when they were not in particularly great shape?
Well, we don't know. That story is yet to be finished out. But it certainly was true of Carly Fiorino. Mm-hmm. She was a Hewlett Packard. Mm-hmm. And she ended up in a terrible situation. She was booted out. And part of what goes with that is that we have so few women in these top positions, they don't have a buddy system.
Right.
They
okay.
don't have people to take their back.
All right. Much more to talk about on this new Soft War on Women with Rosalind Barnett and Carol Rivers back on the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls in a minute five. Final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guests today, Carol Rivers from Boston University and Rosalind Barnett from Brandeis University. One is a journalist, one is a senior scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center. We're talking about their book, The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Women and Men and Our Economy. You can join us on the exchange. Phone number is 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. N-word Nash Valley, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment about the structure of the glass ceilings and the glass cliff and everything, the escalators. It was all devised by European white immigrants, and it should be seen as a cultural aberration. And I like to see women not conform to the male mode and deconstruct what's there and rebuild something more egalitarian.
All right. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. Any response from Rosalind or Carol?
Well, I think that, you know, one argument, I mean, is about maybe a good point, but you have to be in the game in order to play the game. And you have women aren't enough of a number in organizations to have an effect of whatever kind. So I think if the goal is to make our organizations more humane, it won't just be women who do this, of course, because men can also want the same kind of outcomes. But we need women in large enough numbers at the top. First of all, it's good for the business themselves. This data shows that the productivity and profitability of a company is related to how many women are in senior management positions. And they can also do something to change the corporate culture, but it's awful hard to do that when they're not in the positions of power in the first place.
Are we still at a point in history when a lot of men, if they're being managed by a woman, are being managed by a woman for the first time, and it's usually a younger one at that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that happens. We have men too. You have young men managing older men. So this age, you have a more age diverse workforce than we ever had before, and now it's age and gender diverse. So we have to work these things out. None of them have to be huge obstacles in and of themselves. And I think we've all had managers, male or female, who've been good or bad. So we can have a good manager and a male or female. I think having managers become aware by education of what gender discrimination looks like. They may not even be aware they're doing this stuff. And if you educate them, make them self-aware, and recognize what they're doing, they may say, oh, my gosh, I don't want to be doing that. That's hurting my bottom line. That's not good for my business. I can put a stop to it. But they have to be made aware of what they're doing first, and that is a role of education where corporations can really have to take a big stand in bringing these issues up to managers at every level.
Rosalind and Carol, go ahead.
It's not good for women to always be the ones who have to care. There's a lot of research showing that, first of all, women don't get any credit for caring. If a man is kind and helpful, he's a hero. If a woman is caring, she's just doing what she's expected to do. So a lot of women get stuck with these jobs of taking care of other people, and there's research shows that's enormously stressful, and it's very difficult. And men sort of don't get asked to do that very much. And it's not fair to expect women to come in and reform everything, that if we want to make the world more humanitarian and more humane, men have to do at least 50% of the heavy lifting in that.
Talk about the continuing sex segregation in the labor force. This is rather surprising. It looks like we're still clinging to some old stereotypes of who does what job based on gender.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. The barriers for women to getting into certain occupations are very, very hard, in spite of the fact that women want to get into those. Now, we have to assume, start by saying that a lot of barriers have come down. We find that women now are more than half of medical school students and graduates of medical schools, which is a relatively new phenomenon. The women are in large numbers going to law schools. The women dominate in veterinary medicine. But if you look into the trades, the skilled labor, very few women. And there are many occupations where there's still a ways to go before women have an easy time to get in and to make a career.
And, at high levels, and this surprised me, it is true that when men talk at length, and they are considered to be powerful and competent and worthy of their position, women, even high-level women, if they talk at length, they're considered to be gabby, emotional, and not competent. And I think, I look ahead and I say, well, what happens to these women now who are looking to move into higher office? I mean, take a look. Bill Clinton, talks all the time, but he's still considered a great politician and a great leader. But if Hillary Clinton's going to talk too much, she may get marked down because she's, women are supposed to be quiet. And even in the last election cycle, if you remember, there were lots of criticism about Hillary Clinton's speech. At one point, her laugh was even called a cackle.
Right.
So, that's another barrier to women as they're trying to move up the ladder. If they are seen as stepping out of, what women are supposed to do and being too gabby.
Rosalind, I'd be surprised if somebody hasn't focus grouped this sort of thing by now that provide side-by-side videos of a man and a woman delivering the exact same speech with the exact same inflection and see what kind of responses they get.
Well, they may well have done that. I'm not aware of it particularly, but I'm sure that's true. We certainly have documented in the literature looking at the same kind of behaviors, men and women, and get very different responses. So we talked before about anger. Men are angry, they're seen as forceful. Women are angry, they're seen as out of control, and so forth. It's very hard for women because they get these two messages. One is be more like your male colleagues, but two is you get slammed for being not feminine enough because you're stepping out of what's expected from the traditional stereotype of women.
Yeah, the Columbia Business School did a wonderful experiment where they took the track record of a very successful woman entrepreneur, and they gave her resume out, and they put a woman's name on one and a man's name on the other, and the business students judged them both as equally competent. But they found the man to be a good colleague, friendly, I'd like to work with him. But when it was a woman's name, they found her selfish, too ambitious, bitchy.
Really? So they read all sorts of things just into the listing of accomplishments.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And one way that's reflected is from the first job out of business school, men and women start out earning very different amounts of money. So the initial job out of business school, women will make $4,600 less than a man. Same school, same credentials, and that gap grows over time. In fact, the higher up you get in an organization, the wider the gender gap. So when you get to the very top, men may be making several times more than women, who have exactly the same history. And again, part of this business about men need more money. They're the breadwinners. They have more potential. They're going to make a name for the company. And women, it's very hard to break out of that. And once you start at a lower salary, it's very, very hard to catch up and make up that difference.
And over the course of a career, that'll be a huge difference in earnings overall.
Huge. Absolutely huge. It's something like roughly three quarters of $1 million. And yet on top of that, this motherhood penalty we talked about briefly, Ann Crittenden, who's done a lot of working in this area, she estimates the motherhood penalty to be $1 million per child.
Wow, that's amazing.
So women have a very hard time, and not because they can't do this work, not because they don't want to do the work, but because people think they can't or don't want to based on these stereotypes that have, no one can point to where these stereotypes come from. They just repeat it over and over again so often that we think it's fact, when in fact it's not.
Let us take another call. We have Jim in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett, the authors of The New Soft War on Women.
Yes, good morning. When this subject comes up, I always kind of throw a little thorn in it a little bit. Basically, what I'm talking about is probably the upper 8-12%, maybe 8% of women big corporations, where management looks good on a, you know, people investing in the stocks and everything. But all over the United States, women are more and more becoming the heads of small corporations, LLCs. Small business, remember, in the legal term is 50 to 5,000 employees. And most medium-sized cities all over the United States, a business in their area that employs 3 to 5,000 people is not a small business. I mean, right in our area, we have two women that have taken over, well, like a paving company and another construction company and get great government contracts and everything. It's these mid-level corporation people in small towns that we're not talking about. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it. Carol, want to take a stab at that?
I think that we are seeing women become entrepreneurial, and that's wonderful. But it still remains true that in no sector of the American economy do women out-earn men. Men still substantially out-earn women. And it's also worrisome that particularly as money becomes tighter, as when the economy goes down, these women who want to break out into entrepreneurial positions are not going to be able to do so because they're not going to get the banks aren't going to give them the money. So here they are. On the one hand, they've got the banks not giving them the loans when they want to be an entrepreneur. And on the other hand, when they go into companies, they're blocked by not moving up as fast. So I think the women's success in entrepreneurially is wonderful, but it still does not offset what's happening in, you know, other sectors and in the economy in general.
I think Jim's point is good, because there's certainly areas where women are succeeding. It's not an all black picture by any means, but that's a small number of people who head these companies. The vast number of majority of women have a much harder time much harder than men to make the kind of gains that men are making.
There's a whole chapter on the math is hard for women thing, and you particularly single out Simon Baron Cohen for a bit of a whacking. What did he say about gender roles and brains?
He had the most amazing idea. He did a study, which was he had day-old babies, and he had their parents pick them up and see what they looked at. And he says that he claims the boys look more often at mobiles and the girls look more often at faces. And from this study, which wasn't very good because, you know, when the parents held them up, he didn't control for where they looked. So and he had this theory that male brains are good for systematizing science, analyzing, tracking business, and women's brains were good for basically for making friends and
gossiping
and pleasing their partners. And the ridiculous thing that this was all over the media about the idea that the male brain is this, you know, tough analytical brain, and the female brain is this sort of wimpy little brain. And there's no research that supported that study. If anybody looked at the rest of the studies, in almost all the studies, male babies and female babies respond equally to objects and to people. So there's really no basis for that, but it becomes an enormous media story.
Let's take a final call here from James in Springfield. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've noticed that women are, you know, the idea that women in government would be more compassionate and look for, you know, more nurturing solutions to problems and things. And I'd just like to throw out a couple of examples, and maybe I can take your comments on the air. The first example I would give would be Madeleine Albright, who during the Iraqi sanctions in the early 90s, after the UN had come out and said that 500,000 babies or children had died because of the sanctions, and she was quoted as saying, well, it was worthwhile. And I'd like to bring up another one.
Quickly, please, because
we're
getting short
on time. And she was the one that, during the Waco incident, gave the order to burn the compound there.
Not to burn it, but not to burn it, but to raid it.
Pardon?
Not to burn it, but to raid it.
Well, but somehow it caught on fire, and 85 people were burned to death.
True.
And the third one I'd like to bring up is Condoleezza Rice. And during the the upsurge towards the Iraqi war, she was right in there, you know, lying with the best of them, you know, about
right. We need to move on to the answer now because we're so short on time. James, thank you for that.
To respond to that, I think that's an example of the problems we have. That's a stereotype about what women are like. Well, not all women are like are compassionate and nurturing. Some women are and some women aren't. And to assume that all women are going to be compassionate and nurturing by virtue of being women is a form of stereotyping that women who are not so prominent as the ones you mentioned suffer a lot from the same kind of thinking. Men, too. You know, men are supposed to not be compassionate and not nurturing, when, of course, some men are and some men aren't. So I think we have to do away with all these stereotypes, period, and let people be who they are.
Well, the final question then would be, if you're a white-collar worker in 1980, you're close to retirement age and possibly beyond it, so why have the attitudes not left with the older workers? Carol Rivers?
Well, I think the thing is, the one thing that happened is the more outspoken attitudes may have left with the older workers, but what we're discovering is that these stereotypes are, they go underground. So the younger workers don't say, you know, I'm not going to hire you because you're a woman, but they might say, you know, you're just not as likable as Joe. Or, the younger workers have a lot of the stereotypes still. And that's why we say this, the soft war on women is still going on. It's, you know, we're making some strides, but it's still there.
All right. The New Soft War on Women by Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett. Ladies, thanks for joining us today in The Exchange.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you both. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll talk about Tim Doney from the Medford Police leaving for Springfield's police chief job. We'll talk about wood-burning controls in Jackson County, and we'll talk about the film GMO OMG. That's all tomorrow on The Jefferson Exchange. Our producer, Charlotte Dern, our student assistant, Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.